I wanted to talk about is some of the halachos that are relevant to sitting in sukkah. And I think it's just an opportunity for us to quickly run through the halacha. Different scenarios come up all the time, different circumstances and different places where we are. And it's an opportunity for us to just go through it. So first of all, by way of introduction, the mitzvah of sukkah is considered to be a mitzvah chaviva ad ma'od. It's considered to be a very important and beautiful mitzvah. In the Sefer Pele Yoetz, he writes that sukkah is a mitzvah that is chashuva v'chaviva, haba mizman lezman. The mitzvah of sukkah is something, as we know, that only comes around once a year. And as a result of that, we already have a certain affinity and a certain excitement toward that mitzvah. And he says, G'dola k'dushasa k'kdushas beis ha-knesses, that there's a certain level of kedusha that a sukkah has. In fact, I once saw in the Sefer Shem Yishmuel, I forgot if he quotes it from someone else or he just has this own idea. There are different minhagim, whether on Shabbos Chalamoid or Shabbos Sukkis, whether a person should sing Shalom Aleichem or not. It's a discussion. Different families have different minhagim. So I once saw in the Sefer Shem Yishmuel that he says that we should not sing Shalom Aleichem because the kedusha of the sukkah is so elevated that even the Malachi Hashareis are not allowed into the sukkah. Now, I found that to be a profoundly amazing comment, maybe a bit to the extreme, but it gives us the point, and that is that a sukkah is considered to be a place that is a makom kadosh, and therefore as a result of that, as we'll see in a few minutes, the Ramah says that a person should be careful not to do anything that is a minhag shel bizayon. A person should not do any kind of activity that is not befitting or unbecoming of what a sukkah is really supposed to be used for. So that is number one. What is the reason why we sit in the sukkah? Well, the obvious reason is because the Torah tells us to sit in the sukkah. But beyond that, there's an amazing comment of the Medrash that you may not be aware of. The Medrash writes in the Psikta de Rav Kahana, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Lama anu osin sukkis achar yom ha-kipurim. So, of course, the Torah says, Basukkos teishu shivas yamim, that we have an obligation to sit in the sukkah for a duration of 7 days, the entire yomtiv. But ask the Medrash, why is it that this is situated right after Yom HaKippurim? What's unique? What's the connection between Yom Kippur and Sukkot? Seemingly nothing at all. And the Medrash answers as follows, because it could be, on Yom HaKippurim, it was destined on any of us, it was determined that we are going to be punished with a galus, that for whatever sin we may have done, perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels the appropriate way for us to take a punishment for that is that at some point in our lives we're going to have to go out to galus. And therefore, as a result, we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if Chalila, if it so happens that we have been destined or determined that we are going to have to go to galus, let us make this our punishment of galus. We're going to leave our homes for a week, we're going to go outside to the sukkah, and we're going to show that we are not as comfortable as we otherwise would have been. And that is why, says the Medrash, that we have the Yom Tov of Sukkis right after the commemoration of Yom HaKippurim, as we're thinking about all of the chataim, as we're thinking about all of the potential onesh that a person may have to go through. We take upon ourselves, right after Yom HaKippurim, the first thing we're going to do is to take upon the onesh of galus, in case, Rachmana Litzlan, in case, God forbid, any of us have been destined to have such a punishment come to us. We know that for the 7 days of Sukkis, one is supposed to sit in the sukkah, one is supposed to do all activities in the sukkah, and we're told in the Gemara that you're supposed to bring in everything that you otherwise would have used in your home should be brought into the sukkah. That applies during the day. That applies even at night as well. So where does this come from? So it's interesting. The Chayyadim writes that the Kedusha of the sukkah is so important that a person should realize that you shouldn't talk Dvarim B'Telem in there. And obviously you shouldn't fight, says the Mishnah Berurah. My father always says every year, well, if we have to treat the sukkah the same way as we do our homes, then we have to make sure that we speak Lashon Hara around the table in the sukkah the same way we would in our own homes. Obviously, that is a joke, and we should make sure that we don't speak Lashon Hara in our own homes, and then we should make sure not to do that in the sukkah either. But the point that the Chayyadim and the Mishnah Berurah are making is a very important one, that we have to realize the sukkah is a very special place, and we're supposed to sit there and try to understand the kedusha of the sukkah and the paramount importance that it's supposed to bring into our lives. Now, if sitting in the sukkah and not talking to Dvarim B'Telem is going to bring us to a point where everyone's going to be sitting around the table doing nothing, and sitting around the table just being sad, obviously that would not be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. So we have to have a balance. At the same time, we should all be talking to each other, we should be enjoying each other's company, but we should try to make sure that our conversations are going to be ones that really are ones that are geared toward the sukkah. And that's why I would say it's not always easy when we have an entire family, when we have people around with us, to determine how the conversation is going to go. Everybody has their own ideas what they want to speak about. Perhaps we are not the ones who are running the conversation. We are not the ones who own the home. We are not the ones who are running the meals. And maybe it would be an idea for us if we prepared a little bit before Yom Tov to have a couple of nice thoughts to share. Doesn't have to dominate the entire conversation, but maybe at some point throughout the course of the Yom Tov to have the opportunity to share thoughts and to try to steer the conversation in that way, that would be something that, of course, would not only elevate our Yom Tov, but would elevate others who are with us as well. So as we said, the Sukkah is supposed to be seen as the place where we spend our entire week of Yom Tov. It's the place which is really supposed to be like our experience in our home. And therefore, we're supposed to try to make the Sukkah as comfortable as possible. Where does that come from? How do we know that? So the Pasuk is really something that is expanded upon in the Gemara Maseches Sukkah. The Pasuk says, Basukos Teshvu Shivas Yamin. Now, the Gemara says that curious word, Teshvu, is really to be extended to mean Teshvu Ke'en Taduru, which means the same way that a person, says the Gemara, Mikan Amru, from here we learn, Kol Shivas Yamin Osa Adam Sukkaso Keva Ubeisa Arai. For the 7 days of Sukkot, for that duration of time, a person should try to make their home as the impermanent place where they are. And the Sukkah is supposed to be where we spend most of our time. Ketzad, how do you do that? How do you demonstrate that? Says the Gemara, Hayulo Kelim Naim Malon LeSukkah. If you have nice things in your home, you should bring them into the Sukkah. Matzos Nos, if you have nice tablecloths, you should bring them into the Sukkah. Ocha LeShosel Matayim LeSukkah. And we do everything that we otherwise would have done in our homes inside of the Sukkah. And that is Paskin Lehalacha and the Mechaber, Simen Tafresh Lamates, where he tells us that we should do everything we can to try to beautify our Sukkah and to make that the main place where we're going to be spending our time over the duration of the Yom Tov. The Mishnah Berurah says that therefore we should try to do as little as possible that is not relevant to the Sukkah in the Sukkah. So anything that a person has to do that is really not going to bring to a ambiance of Kedushas HaSukkah should not be done there. However, says the Mishnah Berurah, if let's say over the course of Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed, a person wants to play a game, so you want to play, I don't know what games you play at this stage of your lives. I know what I'm playing with my kids at this stage of my life, so we're playing Guess Who, and Monopoly, and Risk, and all the things that all of us played as children. But if you're playing games that adults play, or you're reading a book, says the Mishnah Berurah, even if it's not a book that's a book of Kedusha, you should do that in the Sukkah, because everything that we generally would do should be done in the Sukkah. So much so, the Chayyadim takes it even further, and he says perhaps there would be an argument to be made that maybe a person should not even have a tablecloth out on their dining room table or their kitchen table inside of the house, to really demonstrate very clearly to everyone who comes into your home, we are not using the house this week. We are really using the Sukkah. And that is why even if you walk into my house, you are not going to find the table that is set. You're not going to find plastic cups that are out. You're going to go into the Sukkah and you will find that that is where everything is set up. So I don't know that we have to go that far. Other Achronim don't agree with the Chayyadim. But I just think it's an interesting point that the Chayyadim raises, that maybe a person should even not set up their own home to show that really the house is not the place where I am going to be spending the duration of time during the Yom Tov of Sukkot. Why is it that we sit in the Sukkah? So that is an interesting question. The Gemara actually tells us in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that when we are observing a mitzvah mid'oraisa, we should have in mind mitzvahs trichas kavana. We should have in mind what it is that we're doing. So when we do certain mitzvahs, we're supposed to have in mind what the purpose, what the goal, what the function of that mitzvah is. So for example, when one says Kriya Shema, he's supposed to have in mind Kabbalah Sol Malcha Shamayim. What if I just say Kriya Shema without really thinking about anything? So that really takes away from what the mitzvah is supposed to really accomplish for all of us. So here, what exactly is it that we're supposed to be thinking as we sit in the Sukkah? So number one, we're told in the Psukim themselves that the reason why we sit in the Sukkah, the tour in Simen Tafresh Chafhei, which is Hilchos Sukkah, tells us the following, and he's quoting from the Psukim themselves. Now, what's interesting is the Tur is generally a Sefer Halacha. The Tur usually doesn't give us nice, sweet ideas, even though sweet ideas are very nice and very sweet, but the Tur usually gives us the bottom line Halacha. Now here, he goes a little bit out of the ordinary, and he explains to us why is it that we sit in the Sukkah, which leads the Bach to argue. The Bach is one of the commentaries on the Tur. He says, this is so unusual. Why would the Tur go out of his usual Piskei Halacha and now go on a limb and start talking about the reasons behind why we sit in the sukkah, which is the Bach argues, perhaps if you don't have this in mind while you're sitting in the sukkah, you have not fulfilled your obligation of mitzvahs yeshiva b'sukkah, which is very unusual. That's very unusual, that if a person doesn't have that in mind, they will not observe the mitzvah. That's interesting. But that is what the Bach argues. And the Mishneh Berurah quotes it lahalacha, and that's why we should try, lechatchila, to have in mind while we sit in the sukkah, why it is that we're doing this. So why is it that we do it? So the Tur writes as follows. Explains the Tur. Basukos teishu shivas yamim. What is the end of that pasuk? The end of the pasuk tells us, leman yedu dorosechem, in order that all future generations should know, ki basukos hoshavti is b'nei Yisrael b'hotzi osam me'eretz Mitzrayim. So there's some kind of intrinsic connection between sukkos and Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now what is that connection? The connection is, explains the Tur, that when we came out of Mitzrayim, we all had to live somewhere. We didn't have a comfortable place to live. We were all in the desert. And it was not easy to live in the desert at all. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu created for us, the Gemara has a discussion, was it actual huts that were created for the Jewish people to live in? Or perhaps, as the Gemara was, the Anane HaKavod, which was a miraculous existence. And that is what we're supposed to remember, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when He took us out of Mitzrayim, created shelter for us, either the Anane HaKavod, or He made Sukkos Mamish, says the Gemara. Two opinions in the Tanaim. What exactly did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do to help us get through the experience as we travel through the Midbar, as we travel through the desert? And that is what we need to be thinking about as we sit in the Sukkah. The point that we try to make when we sit in Sukkah is that the same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked after us when we came out of Mitzrayim, and He provided us shelter, and He did everything that was necessary for us to succeed, so too in our generation, it is always the same. HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides us with all of our needs, and sometimes even when things seem to be extremely difficult and the conditions are less than ideal, for example, the generation of the Jews traveling through the Midbar, we realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there at times like those as well, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure that we are going to be protected and that we are taken care of. So it's important that the Achronim explain, it's important that we not only think about this, that we use this as an opportunity. In fact, the Bikur Yaakov, which is one of the very important Svarim on Hilchos Sukkah, he writes that the same way on Leil HaSeder, we have a mitzvah, v'higadot levincha, that we try to impress upon our children the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, how it unfolded, all the details. So too, he writes on Sukkot, we should try our best to talk to the younger children who are there and to give them over the values and the lessons of what it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in this supernatural experience of Anane HaKavod and allowed us to be safe during this very, very dangerous time in our lives as a people. So that really is something that's important for us to think about, and that is why we have this mock sukkah that we make today to try to bring us back into that time of when HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us into the sukkah as we were leaving Mitzrayim and traveling on our way toward Eretz Yisrael. Now the Torah asks a very obvious question. When was Yitzias Mitzrayim? When did Yitzias Mitzrayim happen? As we know, we left Mitzrayim on Pesach. Well, if that's the case, why are we sitting in the sukkah at this time of the year? Why don't we sit in the sukkah during Chodesh Nisan? This would seem to be very arbitrary. It's not connected at all. While it's true that in the course of the 40 years that we were in the desert and we were living in the Anane HaKavod and living off of the miracles of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, while it's true that we pass by this season of year, of course, but we pass by every season of year. So why don't we sit in the sukkah when it would be most appropriate, which is on the occasion of Yitzias Mitzrayim in Chodesh Nisan? It would seem to be a strange choice to sit in the sukkah during Chodesh Tishrei. And the answer that the Torah gives is because we want it to be obvious to everyone who sees us the reason why we're sitting in the sukkah. You see, we know most people who have a swimming pool in their backyard have already closed it. The season is over. Most people who have a membership to a beach club somewhere, at least here in the East Coast, understand that the beach club is now over because this is not the season to be sitting outside. Just yesterday, it was 53 degrees. This is not a comfortable time to be sitting outside. Now today, it's 73 degrees, so it's hit or miss. But generally, during the season of Pesach, the weather outside is beautiful. And somebody who passes by will say, oh, you're sitting outside because this is a beautiful time of year. And that is why. So you're going to ask Kayla, maybe the reason why we sit outside is because we want to show we're doing this only for the mitzvah Hashem. Why don't we sit out in the middle of January or February when it's absolutely freezing cold and it's undeniable the reason why we're sitting outside? Great question. But explain the Acharonim. We'll get to your question in a minute. But the Acharonim explain, the Tur writes that perhaps the reason why we sit now is because we want to show that the reason why we are doing this is not because we want to relax outside. It's not because we want to feel so comfortable. It's not because we want to just have the enjoyment of the sunlight, but rather because we want to be outside, because that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to do. Yes, you have a question?
Wouldn't that only apply in certain parts of the world? Like in other parts of the world, isn't it really nice right now? Like in Israel, isn't it really nice weather right now?
Yes, so that's a very good question. That's a very good question, especially based on what we're going to see in a little bit, in a few minutes, about what happens when it rains on Sukkot. So you'll see in a minute. I don't have a very good answer for that. My only thing I would say is that the Tur did not live in Eretz Yisrael. So maybe he's writing for those of us in Chutz Laaretz, though I'm not exactly sure. I don't know the answer to your question. I think the question is better than the answer I'm going to make up right now. So that's why I'm not going to make one up. That I think we should all think about that question. It's a great one. So let us move a little bit further. And that is a very important question, especially for all of you who are on this call. Are women obligated to sit in the sukkah? That is a very important question that we need to ask ourselves whenever we are confronted with any mitzvah in the Torah. Is it something that is shared both by men and women, or is it something that perhaps women are exempt from having to observe? So this seemingly should fall under the general category of a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. That if you have a mitzvah that is a time-bound mitzvah, women are generally not obligated to fulfill them, to perform them. So this really is something that is clear in Shulchan Aruch. We are told in the Mechaber and Siman Tav Reish Mem says, Nashim Peturim in HaSukkah, women do not have an obligation to sit in the sukkah. The Taz says, why is it that women don't have an obligation? Because this would fall into the general category of a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. The same way we have many mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. Actually, if I were to ask you, how many are there? We heard about this concept, mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. If you were just to take a random guess, how many would you say? 100? How many are there that women do not share an obligation with men? So you're shaking your heads. 100 is too much. So would you say 50? No. 50 is too many or too little? Okay, I'm going to ask a very simple question, and that has nothing to do with this year. Why do people keep leaving the Zoom and then coming back on so that I have to readmit them? I'm not exactly sure. But okay, I hope you're having a good time. So the answer is it's about 7 or 8 mitzvahs altogether. This whole category of mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, where we say that a woman does not share the obligation with a man, is limited to 7 or potentially 8 mitzvahs altogether, and that's it. Now, the Taz explains the reason why women are exempt from this mitzvah is because it is a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. Now, that is very troubling. The Rishonim ask, we have many mitzvah saseh shehazman grama because we know that women are going to share the obligation based on a principle of af hein hayu ba'oso hanes. Take, for example, the mitzvah of dalet kosos on Pesach. We know that women have to drink the 4 cups of wine, just like men do, and the question is why? Shouldn't we assume that that is a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, that women should not have an obligation to observe? The answer the Gemara gives is, you're right. Of course, dalet kosos is a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. If you would decide on Hanukkah to drink 4 cups of wine, you would not fulfill the obligation. It has to be done on Leil HaSeder. Well, that being said, why should women have to do it? Says the Gemara, because af hein hayu be'osa hanes. The whole commemoration of the 4 cups of wine is because we want to remind ourselves of the great miracle that happened on Yitzias Mitzrayim, v'hotseisi v'yitzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti. And therefore, women were involved in that miracle in the same way that the men were. The Rashbam, one of the Rishonim, writes, even perhaps more profoundly than the men were. Bizchus nashim tzidkanios nigalu avosenim imitzrayim. They were a major catalyst of the miracle, and that is why women share the obligation of 4 cups of wine, even though it is a time-bound mitzvah. Well, if that's the case, and we find that by other things as well. What's another example? Yeah?
Maybe lighting the Chanukiah.
Right. Women lighting Chanukah candles would be another example. So why is that? Because af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. Women hearing the Megillah would also be something. Af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. They were involved in the great miracle of the Nes Purim, and therefore they are also supposed to read the Megillah. They are also supposed to be a part of it. So if that's the case, why is it that this should not be in the same category? If the whole objective of the mitzvah of sitting in Sukkah is to remember Basukos Hoshavti is B'nei Yisrael B'hotzi Osam Me'eretz Mitzrayim, then that is a experience that was shared both by men and women alike. Why would we say that women are exempt from sitting in the sukkah? That is a question that is raised by the great Rishonim. And it's something that they struggle with very, very much. So the Mardechai gives a technical answer. He says, Afein ha'yiba osanes only goes on mitzvahs derabanan. It doesn't include mitzvahs midaraisa. Okay, we can quibble about the details, but it's a very important question. The bottom line is in Shulchan Aruch, however you get around this issue, Shulchan Aruch says women do not have a strict obligation to sit in the sukkah. Now, as we know, women very often volunteer of themselves to do a mitzvah even if they're not obligated to do so. Just like we find by Tkiyas Shofar. A woman does not have an obligation to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, but most women I know try their best to go to shul and to participate in the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar. Of course, if somebody is not well, if somebody is unable to do so, so they don't. But of course, if somebody is able to, they try their best, both men and women try to be in shul or try to have someone come to the house to blow the shofar for them. So would a woman who is involving herself in the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, which she is not obligated to do, would she recite a bracha? That is an important question. It's a discussion among the Rishonim. It's a machlokas between the Ashkenazim and the Sfardim. Sfardim generally assume that when a woman volunteers to do a mitzvah that she's not obligated to do, she would not recite a bracha, whereas the Ramah disagrees, and the Ramah says if a woman decides to go hear the shofar in shul, which she's not obligated to do, the Ramah in Hilchas Tkiyas Shofar writes him in Tafkuf Pei Tes, that even though it's a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, a woman would recite a bracha. And that is what the Mishneh Berurah writes and the Aruch HaShulchan, that all women in our generation try their best to sit in the sukkah, even though they don't have an obligation to do so. And of course, since they go to sit in the sukkah, they should recite a bracha, just like they would when they go to hear the shofar, or they do any other mitzvah that they may not have an obligation to observe. So that is the general custom. There is obviously the minhag of the Sfardim, which is never to make a bracha on a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama if a woman chooses to do so. But for the Ashkenazim on the call, that is generally the psak halacha that we follow, that a bracha should be recited on a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama if a woman chooses to fulfill it. What is the halacha with regard to a katan? So I know all of you are single and nobody has any children, but it's an important question. What would we say? Does a child have an obligation to sit in the sukkah? Well, a child really does not have an obligation to observe any mitzvahs. The only reason that a child would observe a mitzvah is because the parents have an obligation, which is a mitzvah of chinuch. And a mitzvah Hashem, you'll all have the opportunity to be mekayim the mitzvah of chinuch. It so happens that there's a discussion whether the mitzvah of chinuch is on the father, or does the mother share in it as well, which I always find very ironic, because probably most of the chinuch that our children get is either from school or from their mother. And I just find it funny, I find it interesting, that the Achronim discuss whether a mother shares in the obligation of chinuch. But let's assume that a mother, of course, shares in the obligation of chinuch because the mother is going to help raise the children, or the mother is the strongest part of the raising of the children. And the question then becomes, would a child have to sit in the sukkah? So the Mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Tav Reish Mem, that a katan she'eino tzarach le'imo, if you have a child who's of age where he no longer needs his mother, so that means we're not talking about a child who's 6 months old. Obviously, that child is not in the place where chinuch is relevant. And in general, you have to ask yourself, how old is the age of chinuch when it comes to all mitzvahs? Is it the same? Is it uniform? Do we assume that for all mitzvahs, a child has to be mechunach at the same age? And the Gemara says, no, it depends what the mitzvah is and how old the child is. There are certain mitzvahs which require a little bit more attention, and therefore the child at 3 years old or 4 years old is not going to be expected to start observing that mitzvah. Say, for example, a child saying a bracha. It's something that becomes second nature to us as Jews. We say brachas all the time on everything that we do. So here, would we assume that a child needs to... Sorry. A child needs to say a bracha only when he's, 10 or 11 years old? Of course not. If you wait till 10 or 11 years old, the child is not going to end up saying brachas at all. So when a child is 3 or 4 years old, we already encourage the child to be saying brachas, even though it is only the mitzvah of chinuch. How about shaking a lulav? So I assume the Gemara says that's a little bit older. When a katan hayodea linanea, the Gemara says not just when a child knows how to hold the dalet minim, but when he actually understands how to move it around in the proper directions. So a lot of adults don't know how to do that either. But when a child is old enough to know how to do it properly, so then we assume that is when a child is supposed to have the mitzvah of chinuch performed for them, that they should have a dalet minim available to them to do the mitzvah. So here the Mechaber says, what would be the appropriate age to assume that a child is obligated from the chinuch standpoint to sit in the sukkah. Shulchan Aruch says, once he no longer needs his mother. And how old is that? If I would ask you, how old would you think a child needs to be that he no longer needs his mother? What would you say? In our generation, it's like 35, right? So, I'm exaggerating, but at what age would it be in the days of the Shulchan Aruch? Shulchan Aruch says, like, when he's around 5 or 6. That's like an amazing, it reminds me, Moshe has a tshuva where he talks about the Gemara Maseches Ksuvos. I'm going off script here. But the Gemara writes in Maseches Ksuvos that there's a pasuk in Navi, I don't remember where it is. It says, Oset Tzedakos V'chol Eis, that there's an individual that is described as doing tzedakah all the time. So who is this person, asked the Gemara, who's doing tzedakah all the time? How can you possibly do tzedakah all the time? There are going to be times in our lives when we are doing other things. So what does it mean, Oset Tzedakos V'chol Eis? So the Gemara says, Zeh Hazan Banav Ubenosav, this is somebody who takes upon himself to support his children even after the age when he's not obligated to do so. Interesting. So, what exactly does that mean? So the Gemara says, obviously a parent who brings children into the world signs up not just to give birth to the children, but to take care of them. So, he has an obligation, the parents together share an obligation, to raise those children and to take care of their most basic and essential needs. Now, until what age is a parent expected to take care of their children? So, if I'm married, and I have children and grandchildren already, my parents are already 95 years old. Do they still have an obligation to take care of me? Of course not. There comes a time, obviously, we all understand, when I'm expected to be an adult and I now have an obligation to take care of myself. So how old is that? How old is that? So the Gemara says, around like 5. Right? Like once a kid is 5 years old, he should be getting his own job. He should be out there in the workforce. He should be doing things. His parents don't have an obligation. If you are the big tzaddikes who decides that even after my child is like 5 years old, I'm still going to choose to take care of them, you are oset tzedakas b'chol eis. That's an amazing charity. That's unbelievable. So that's what the Gemara says. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says, come on, we don't live in a generation where 5 or 6 or 7 year olds are out getting jobs and taking care of themselves. Obviously, the halacha changes. A parent has an obligation to take care of their children today, way beyond the age of 5 or 6, certainly through high school. Rav Moshe says, until they're out of the house, maybe till they're in college, maybe till they get married, Rav Moshe says, that would be the absolute obligation of a parent to continue to take care of their children, and that would not be counted as miser money if you give money toward that. Once a child is out of the house, if a child gets married and then needs help, and a parent wants to help that child out, they can take that off of the cheshbon of miser, because they don't have an obligation to do so. Now, that is very dependent on the kind of community and the expectation of the community in which you live. If the expectation in your community is not just that parents are going to support their children when they're young and past 5 or 6 or 7, but even once they leave the house, even once they're in college, even once they get married the first couple of years till they finish school, whatever the arrangement is in your community, then you have to understand that this is going to be reevaluated. But I was reminded of that when the Mechaber writes over here, when you have a katan she'eno tzarach le'imo, when you have a katan that no longer needs his mother's help, such as a katan who's 5 or 6 years old, and we assume that, of course, at 5 or 6 years old, he's now able to take care of himself, doesn't need his parents anymore, then the parents have an obligation of chinuch on that child. Obviously, that is no longer the case. And the age of chinuch would probably be a little bit older than 5 or 6 today, because we would assume that that threshold is going to change as the generations change as well, I guess, as we become less and less mature. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes that he doesn't understand why we're not careful about the mitzvah of chinuch with our children. And I often think about this. You know, we take our children, we take families on trips on Chol HaMoed, and we say, okay, so the kids, they'll eat over here, and the adults, they'll make sure not to eat outside of the sukkah. So the first thing we should make sure is certainly the adults should not be eating outside of a sukkah. We're going to see in a minute what do we have to eat in the sukkah and what perhaps does not require a sukkah, but certainly the adults should try their best not to eat outside of a sukkah. But why are we so flippant? Why are we so quick to say that the children should eat outside of a sukkah? We have a mitzvah of chinuch where we're trying to impress upon the kids that they should one day be interested in engaging in the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah as well. And that means we should try our best to show them that they too should observe the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah, which means we shouldn't be so quick to take them to places where there's not going to be an available sukkah to them. So it's something to think about, and it's what the Aruch HaShulchan writes. He's not exactly sure, lama Ein nizharim bazeh. Why are we not careful about this when it's something that clearly falls under the guidelines and the rubric of the regular mitzvah of chinuch, which we're generally very, very careful about? An absolutely beautiful psak of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which I always find his psakim are so laden with human sensitivity. I don't know if you've picked that up so far from things that I've shared from him, but Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach asks, why is it that even though we try to have our children sit in the sukkah for all the meals of Yom Tov, and we do whatever we can to make sure that we're mechanech them to the importance of the mitzvah of sukkah, why is it that we don't have our children sleep in the sukkah? Right? Most kids don't sleep in the sukkah, even though sleeping in the sukkah is just as much an obligation as eating in the sukkah. There is no difference between sleeping and eating in the sukkah. So why is it that we don't have chinuch on children to sleep in the sukkah, just like we have chinuch on children to eat in the sukkah? And the answer of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach gives is so beautiful. He says, very often, if somebody is not feeling well, they're going to go inside. If somebody is too cold, they're going to go inside. He says children are going to be so excited to sleep in the sukkah, even if it's freezing outside, they're not going to realize they're going to get sick from sleeping outside, and they're not going to have the personal wherewithal to know that it's not appropriate to be outside in this kind of weather. And therefore, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, because we're concerned that kids are going to get sick, and they're not going to look after themselves because they're going to have such an excitement to be in the sukkah, therefore, he says, we make sure not to do the mitzvah of chinuch on children when it comes to this aspect of shina b'sukkah, of sleeping in the sukkah. I found that to be a fascinating insight, a very interesting perspective, but that is what he writes. The Gemara seems to say that every time a person goes into the sukkah, they are supposed to make a bracha of Asher Kedishanu Mimitzvos Avitzivanu Leishev Basukkah. Now we know our general practice today is that we only make this bracha when we are sitting down and actually about to eat something. So what is this all about? So we have a Gemara Masechta Sukkah Daf Mem Hei, where the Gemara says that Echad Zev Echad Zev Shiva. The Gemara says we assume that you're supposed to sit in the sukkah for 7 days and you're supposed to make a bracha on sitting in the sukkah for 7 days as well. Now Tosis writes, Sukkah Kol emas de nichnas la, every time you go into the sukkah, kidei sheyochal v'yishta v'yishen, if you're going into the sukkah to eat something, to drink, to go to sleep, even if it's 10 times a day, writes Tosis, you're going to make a bracha al kol achas v'achas. You're going to make a bracha each time. Tosis brings a proof from tefillin. If a person is wearing tefillin and they take them off, then they put them back on, take them off, you keep making another bracha. So too, say the Baliyat Tosis, a person who goes into the sukkah, every time you're about to go in, you make another bracha. Even though you were there this morning, even though you were there 5 times a day, 10 times a day, you keep making the bracha over and over again. The Chayyadim writes that Medina the Gemara does say that if a person sits in the sukkah and then has to go out to work and then comes back later, you're supposed to make a bracha every single time. Why is that? And he says the reason why is because there's a hesach hadas in between, because I'm not thinking about the sukkah while I'm at work, and therefore he says, even if I go many, many times, I will make a bracha. That is quoted in the Mishnah Berurah. Now you'll ask yourself, Why is it that we make a Birchas HaTorah in the morning, and even though we all go out to work and we all do all kinds of things, we don't make a Birchas HaTorah later on in the afternoon when we come to sit down and learn Torah again? Why does one bracha in the morning count for the entire day? If we have this concept of Hesach Hadas, which means that we're not supposed to take our minds off of something once we made a bracha on it, then why is it that when it comes to Birchas HaTorah, that seems to defy their general rule? And the answer there is, the Rishonim say, because who is not thinking about learning Torah during the day? There's not a moment during my day when I am not thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and His mitzvah. That's the assumption. It's not a Hesach Hadas. When I go to work, I'm thinking about what it means to be a Jew as well. I'm thinking about how to run my business based on the laws and values of Torah. And I think about Torah all day long. And that is the assumption of the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch and the Rishonim. And that is why we say only one bracha berchas HaTorah a day, whereas by any other mitzvah, we assume once you stop doing the mitzvah, you will have to then repeat a bracha later on. Rabbeinu Tam writes that since the ikar kviyas ha'adam in the sukkah, since the main purpose of a person being in the sukkah is for that person to be able to eat in the sukkah, therefore he says the minhag has developed, the custom has developed, that we only make a bracha when we sit and eat in the sukkah. Even though he says it should have been the case that we would make a bracha even when we're just going into the sukkah to play a game. But yet he says the general custom is that we only make a bracha when we are about to eat in the sukkah, because that is something that is the ikar kviyas ha'adam. That is the main purpose, the main focus of what a person does while they are inside of a sukkah. Now, there are some who say, ask a question. Why do we not make a bracha when we sleep in the sukkah? So the Levush, one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, says, perhaps the reason why we don't make a bracha when we go to sleep in the sukkah is because you always have to make a bracha before you do a mitzvah. If I'm going to make a bracha before I go to sleep, what happens if I don't fall asleep? So then it turns out to be a bracha levatela. I made a bracha asher kedushan mitzvah savitzivan leishe basukkah. My intent was I'm about to go to sleep. The problem is I'm rolling in my bed back and forth for an hour or two. I can't fall asleep. Then it turns out my bracha is a bracha levatela. So he says that's the reason why we don't make a bracha. So some later achronim asked, how can that be the argument? We know that by, where's a good test case? Bedikas chametz. Bedikas chametz is a great test case. By bedikas chametz, the halacha is, you make a bracha asher kedushan mitzvos v'tzivan al bir chametz, and you don't know whether or not you're going to find something. So the Ramah says it's a good idea to put out 10 pieces of bread just in case you don't find something so that your bracha is not a bracha levatel. What if a person doesn't have 10 pieces of bread? I went away to a hotel for Pesach. I didn't bring 10 pieces of bread along with me. Do I have to do bedikas chametz? The answer is yes. Will I make a bracha on the bedikas chametz? The answer is yes. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but it's worth mentioning. One year I was called by somebody on right before Pesach, and they told me they were going away on Chol HaMoed Pesach to a hotel. They weren't going to be there the first days. They were staying home for the Sedarim, and they were going to be in a hotel for the second day. So I said, once you get there, you have an obligation to make a bedika and to make a bracha on the bedika. So they said, okay. So they went out to Gourmet Glot, which is the local supermarket here in the Five Towns, and they went to purchase 10 pieces of bread, which, by the way, it's insane that Gourmet Glot sells you 10 wrapped up pieces of bread. I don't know why people can't just do it on their own, but okay, it's fine. So they went out to buy a bedikas chametz kit, and they brought it along with them on Pesach to do the bedikas chametz in the hotel. I was beside myself. I could not believe. That's like actually an iser de'araisa of bayira bayimatze. Like, you just brought 10 pieces of bread with you along to the hotel, violating the iser bayira bayimatze, because the Ramah says we have this minhag of putting out 10 pieces of bread. So one thing that's very important to remember is if you're doing a bedikas chametz on Pesach, which you have an obligation to do if you're in a place that was not checked before Pesach, don't bring the 10 pieces of bread along with you. However, you do make a bracha. Even though it's on Pesach, you do make a bracha without the 10 pieces of bread. So the question then is, why do I make a bracha if maybe it will turn out to be a bracha levatala? After all, I may not find any chametz. Just like they argue over here, why do I not make a bracha on sleeping in the sukkah? Because maybe I won't fall asleep. So why should these be different? What's the obvious answer? The obvious answer is, if I make a bracha before falling asleep in the sukkah and then I don't fall asleep, that would in turn be a bracha levatela. However, if I make a bracha on bedikas chametz and in the end I don't find anything, in the end of the day I still did the mitzvah, which is looking around my house for chametz. We have a mitzvah to be bodek chametz, and that's exactly what I did. Whether I find something or not is irrelevant. That's icing on the cake. The point is I did my mitzvah. The mitzvah is that I'm supposed to make sure that I look around my house for chametz, and that was accomplished. That is something that I did, and therefore, that would not be a problem. So, so that is, in general, what the halacha is. The Ramah says, I'm sorry. Okay, so what happens if a person goes into the sukkah and they have no intention of eating anything? So generally, the minhag is we're machmir. I know it's not good for people who are watching their weight, people who don't want to eat so much, but generally we're machmir over sukkahs, that every time we go into the sukkah, because the Rishonim say that the ikr kviyas ha'adam in the sukkah is by eating, therefore we try, you take a cookie in with you, you try to make a bracha then, even though your intention really is just to go in the sukkah and play a game, but still this is something that we try our best to accommodate. And the way to do that is by making a bracha on a food item when going into the sukkah. That is what the Mishnah Berurah says, that we should try our best to do that to fulfill all obligations. Now the Magen Avraham raises an obvious question, where he says, why is this mitzvah different than the mitzvah of matzah? We know that on Pesach, we have a mitzvah to eat matzah. What's the mitzvah? Number one, the pasuk says, Bo'erev tochlu matzos. It says, on Leil HaSeder, you have to eat matzah. But then another pasuk says, Shivas yamim tochlu alav matzos. For 7 days, for the duration of the Yom Tov, you have an obligation to eat matzah. So the Magen Avraham asks, I don't understand. Any of you enjoy eating matzah? I assume some of you do. So you don't only limit eating matzah to Leil HaSeder. Sometimes you eat matzah during the duration of Yom Tov. Do you make a bracha al achilas matzah every time subsequently throughout Yom Tov when you eat matzah? No. You don't. You only make the first night, and that's it. On Leil HaSeder you make, the second night again, which is Sveka D'Yoma and Chutz La'aretz, so you make. But after that, you don't make a bracha. Even in the morning, you don't make a bracha. Right? When you have the day meal, you don't make a bracha al achilas matzah. You make a hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz because you're eating bread. But why? Not bread. You're eating matzah, but that is the equivalent to bread. I have to be careful with what I say, I guess. So why is it, asked the Magen Avraham, that on the 7 days of Pesach, when you eat matzah, you don't make a bracha al achilas matzah on any subsequent eating that you do after the first night? Whereas when you go into the sukkah, every time you go to sit in the sukkah, you continue to make a bracha ala leishei basukkah, leishei basukkah. Why? Why is this different? And the Magen Avraham explains the reason why is as follows. Because there is no mitzvah, he says, in the duration of Pesach to eat matzah. He quotes from a Levush where he says, Afa gav to be Pesach ein sarach levarach ala chilas matzah b'chol pam sheyochal matzah to lo dami matzah lesukkah. Matzah and sukkah are not at all similar. Why not? She'achilas matzah lav mitzvahi kol yemei ha-pesach. There is no mitzvah to eat matzah for the duration of Yom Tov. It's just that I'm not allowed to eat chametz. And back in the days of the Gemara, bread was a staple of their diet. There were not so many other food items like we have today. And therefore, by default, you had to eat matzah the rest of Pesach. But that is not a mitzvah to do so. It's just you have nothing else to eat, so that's what you eat. And therefore, he says, that is why in the duration of Pesach, you would not make a bracha. However, here, Avol Sukkah, I efshar ladur chutz mimena kol yimei hachag. We have a mitzvah every minute of Yom Tov to sit in the sukkah, and therefore we assume that a bracha should be recited. Each time a person renews that mitzvah, each time a person does it again, you would recite a new bracha. The Mechaber writes in Siman Tav Resh Mem Gimel, am I talking too quickly? Should have asked that 45 minutes ago, but I'm just trying to get through whatever we can. So the Mechaber writes in Siman Tav Resh Mem Gimel, that we have a minhag that we make a bracha on the sukkah, after we say Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz, but before we eat. Right? So you have a minhag that we make the bracha Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz, then we say Leishei Basukah, and then we eat. The Magen Avraham says, isn't that a hepsik? You never make a Hamotzi and then do something else before you eat. So why would you make a bracha of Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz and then make an interruption by saying the bracha of Leishei Basukah? And the answer the Magen Avraham writes is the reason why. Is the same way, let's say, by Kiddush. We make a bracha bori pri hagafen, and then we follow it up with asher bracha banu mikalam. We talk about Yom Tov, we talk about Shechayanu, all the different things that we throw in there. Isn't that a hefsik? You just made a bori pri hagafen. You're not going to drink the wine before you say this whole extra paragraph. The answer is, that's part of the Kiddush. That's important for Kiddush. And therefore, it's all considered to be one composite whole. That's not a hefsik. A hefsik would be, if in between the bracha of hamotzi and the eating, I went out to another room and I started having a conversation about something that's irrelevant to the bread or irrelevant to this bracha, that would be a hefsik. But in this case, this is not considered a hefsik at all, as this is litzorech ha'achila. This is for the sake, for the purpose of the achila. So, the question we need to ask ourselves is, we have a Gemara Maseches Pesachim Daf Zayin where we're told, al kol ha'mitzvos kulam, mevarech aleihem over la'asiyasam. Before we do a mitzvah, we have to make a bracha. So here, why don't we make a bracha here, after we make the hamotzi, and before we eat? Why don't we make it before we go into the sukkah altogether? Right? Wouldn't that make sense? Isn't that the best time to make it? So the Levush asks this question, and he says, Afal pi shal kol hamitzvos chayav levarech over la'asiyasan v'im kein, hachanami gabi sukkah hayelanu levarech alea kodem shi'ikanis ba. Really, we should have made the bracha leishei basukkah before we step into the sukkah. That's when we're about to do the mitzvah. And the same way we make every bracha before we do a mitzvah, before you shake lulav, and before you eat matzah, before you do everything, you make a bracha. So too, before we step into the sukkah, we should have done this bracha. He writes, we have the minhag not to make the bracha of leishei basukah until we're about to eat, which means after we make the hamotzi. Why? Because kivon shehamitzvah nimsheches kol zman ha'achila. He says the mitzvah of teshuva kein taduru means don't just run into the sukkah and walk out. The point is to sit down and to spend time there. when are we going to be spending time there? When we actually make a hamotzi, and we're about to sit down and have a meal. That shows we're about to do the mitzvah of leishev basukkah. And that is why we choose to make this bracha not before we go into the sukkah, but right before we're about to demonstrate that we will spend an extended period of time in the sukkah itself. Okay, what happens if you have a person who is fasting on Sukkot? Either they are not feeling well, they're not able to eat, but they're joining the family, or they're on an IV, whatever it may be, so what do you do? So the Achronim suggests that a person in that kind of situation, the Taz writes in Shulchan Aruch, nearly it seems to me, Misha Bedaito Shein Ochel Paskal Ayom. So I gave the extreme example, somebody's fasting. The Taz writes, every so often you have a person who needs to fast on Sukkot, for example, someone who had a terrible dream. That is what we refer to as a Tainus Chalom, where you fast the next day in order to undo anything terrible that may have come from that dream. So if that so happens on Yom Tov, on Sukkot, so then what do you do about the Bracha Leishei Basukkah? Says the Taz, Kivin She'oso Yom Ein Bar Achilas Pas, Hadrina Ledin HaTalmud, Demavarach B'chol Pam She'nichnas Sham. He says you can go back to the original halacha, which is that even when you just go into the sukkah, you would make the bracha. But some achronim say the greatest way to get out of this problem is just to listen to somebody else who's making the bracha of leishei basukkah and have in mind to be yotze with them. So if that's relevant to you, that's important to know. But for most people, we hope that you're going to be spending time over sukkahs, healthy and well, not worrying about your dreams, certainly not fasting. This is a time of v'ayisach sameach. Now, maybe you'll say v'ayisach sameach means I should fast. I should not eat food. That's a good question. It's a good question, actually, because the Gemara actually discusses how do we fulfill the mitzvah of Yisa'ach Sameach. So the Gemara says it depends who you are. The Gemara assumes, Anashim Baray Lahem, Nashim Baray Lahem, Uktanim Baray Lahem. Each category of people has a different way in which they express their Simchas Yom Tov. So for example, the Gemara says, most men, the Gemara makes an assumption, enjoy having meat and wine. It doesn't mean that women don't, it just means that most men do. And therefore, the way for a man to observe the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov is by eating basar v'yayin. How do women enjoy Yom Tov, says the Gemara? Most women enjoy a new article of clothing or some jewelry. Now, obviously, not all women do, and some men enjoy a new article of clothing as well. But Amir Tzashem, when you all get married, you should demand of your husbands, the Gemara says, that a husband has an obligation to purchase a new article of clothing or jewelry for his wife in order that she should enjoy the Yom Tov. Keep that one. Just remember it, right? Because that's part of Simchas Yom Tov. Good to know, right? Part of Simchas Yom Tov is that a person should experience Yom Tov in the way that they enjoy things. And the Gemara therefore extends it to Ketanim, children. What does Simchas Yom Tov mean to them? Well, usually kids enjoy candy. So the Gemara says, Klayos v'agozim, candy in the days of the Gemara was nuts. They didn't have candy like we have today, but nuts were a great delicacy for kids. And therefore it says that a person should try to provide the children with candy, because that will be a way for them to enjoy, for them to experience the Simchas Yom Tov over the extended period of time that they are going to be celebrating this inyan of the Samachta Bechabecha. Now, what happens if a person forgets to make a bracha of Leishei Basukkah? And now I'm already way into my meal. So what do I do now? At this point, where I've forgotten to do that, what do I do now? So that is something that is actually discussed in the Achronim. The Magen Avraham there in Hilchos Sukkah writes, "Im shachach lebarech leishei basukkah ad she'achal." If a person forgot to make the bracha, so long as you're still eating, you'd be allowed to make the bracha of leishei basukkah. Now, what if a person already finished off the meal? That's a good question. So, the Mishnah Berurah says, so if you already finished the meal, you should really try to eat another cookie. I don't know, try to eat something. Make a bracha leishei basukkah. That would be the best thing to do. But again, we try our best to make the bracha before going into the sukkah, and we try not to forget. Now, the Shulchan Aruch says, what actually obligates us in sitting in the sukkah? It's quoted from a Mishnah in Maseches Sukkah, which says as follows. Ochle mishosin arai chutz l'sukkah. You are allowed to eat something that is not kavua, something that is not your meal, something that is just a snack outside of the sukkah. That is the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Siman Tav Reish Lamed Tes, based on this Mishnah Maseches Sukkah. Now, why is that? Why would you eat something that is just a snack outside of the sukkah? The answer that the Rishonim give is because the whole definition of sitting in the sukkah is based off of what I would do in my own house. Teishu ke'ein taduru. I wouldn't sit outside and have an entire meal set up in the middle of the street. And therefore, you have to do that meal in the sukkah. I would, however, take a little snack while I'm outside of my house. And therefore, the Rishonim say it's not unusual that a person would eat an apple or an orange or some other kind of snack. And therefore, we assume that on sukkahs as well, since during the year I would eat that kind of snack outside of my house, so too on sukkahs I would be allowed to eat that outside of the sukkah as well. Now, the Mechaber is quick to point out, says the Mechaber, although it's true I'm allowed to have a snack or a drink outside of the sukkah, if a person wants to be machmer and make sure not to have anything outside of the sukkah, so then hareiz ha-meshubach, that's wonderful. And the Magen Avraham says we get that from a passage in the Yerushalmi where we're told that if somebody makes sure to eat everything over the duration of Yom Tov in the sukkah, hareiz ha-meshubach, it's a wonderful thing to do, and one should try to do so. So, what is considered achilas keva, and what is considered achilas arai? That is the million-dollar question, and it's very, very hard to really get a clear understanding of what is considered an achilas keva, what is considered a meal that should be eaten in the sukkah, and what is considered to be something which does not require a sukkah, as it is only a snack, as it is only arai. So the Shulchan Aruch says, achilas keva is defined as someone who eats less than a kibetza of pas. Someone who eats less than a small amount of bread, that is considered achilas arai, and you would not have to go into the sukkah when you're eating that. And that applies to pasa babikisnan as well. Means crackers or other things. Some people mistakenly think anytime you have a mezonos, that has to be in the sukkah. It's not true. It's only if it's something that I'm kaveya sudan. It's only if it's something that is not a snack. It's something that I'm eating shaloka derech arai. That would be something that would require a sukkah. But outside of that, a sukkah would not be required. As we mentioned, the same way there's a mitzvah to eat in the sukkah, there is also a mitzvah to sleep in the sukkah. And there would really be no difference at all. The Mechaber does say that if a person is just not comfortable sleeping in the sukkah, so it goes the same as not comfortable doing anything else, that we would not obligate a person to sit in the sukkah if they're not comfortable doing so either. So the question here is, why is it that people do not sleep in the sukkah? The Mechaber writes, sleeping in the sukkah doesn't just mean sleeping in the sukkah for the duration of the night. He says, even if it's a shinas arai, this he contrasts to eating. By eating, we say, if somebody's eating derech arai, if I'm only snacking, I don't have to do that in the sukkah. What if I'm only taking a nap during the day? So the Mechaber says there, even if it's only a shinas arai, I would have an obligation to do that in the sukkah. Why is that the case? Why should shinas arai be different than achilas arai? And the answer there is because, the Mechaber explains, a shinas arai is something that can turn into a shinas keva. We've all been there before, where you intend to take a very small nap, and it turns out it's not as small as we thought, or it turns out that this really is my nap for the whole night. You ever have one of those situations? You lay down, and then you get busy the rest of the night, and it turns out you don't sleep the rest of the night, and that 20-minute nap was my sleep for the whole night. It's happened to me on occasion, and I'm sure it's happened to all of you as well. Things come up, we're studying, we're doing, we're busy, something happens, and we're not able to sleep. And that really is our sleep for the night. And therefore, the Mechaber says, even if it's only something that is intended as a shinas arai, as just a small nap, you would have to do that in the sukkah as well. Now, here is the million-dollar question. The Darkei Moshe, which is the Rama, quotes from the Mordechai, which is one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, one of the Balei Atosis, he says, Avol ha'olam samchu al davar zeh. Why is it that people are not careful about sleeping in the sukkah? We all know that we're much more careful with eating in the sukkah than we are with sleeping in the sukkah. What's that all about? So the Mordechai is quoted as saying, the reason why is because Yireyim min Hatzina. It's too cold at night. Who's going to sleep outside when it's so cold? When we're eating, okay, so we have some soup, you have a hot drink, you try to warm yourself up, but he says, when it's time to go to sleep, so it's not so easy to get warm, it's not so easy to be comfortable, and therefore he says, that is why many people have chosen not to sleep in the sukkah, even though technically there is no difference at all between eating in the sukkah and sleeping in the sukkah. They share the same obligation. The Maharil, who is the father of Ashkenazic Jewry, many psakim of the Rama come from the Maharil, he says that he used to sleep with his wife in the sukkah. Any of you ever heard of such a thing? Husbands and wives sleeping in the sukkah? Really, you have? So the Maharil writes that he used to sleep in the sukkah. Obviously, he says they had a private sukkah, where it was appropriate for his wife to be sleeping, and for her to be sleeping together with him, and therefore he says that is what they did. And he says, maybe this is the reason why we don't sleep in the sukkah. Because after all, most women are not going to have a private place to sleep in the sukkah that is separate from the rest of the people who want to use it. And therefore, he said, if a woman's going to have to sleep in her own home, and her husband is going to have to go sleep in the sukkah, that is going to be in the way of Simchas Yomtiv. That's not going to be something that is going to make our Yomtiv enjoyable. My wife's going to be in the house. She's going to be worrying all night that I'm outside alone. I'm going to be worrying that she's inside alone. And forget about the worry. They find it enjoyable to be sleeping in the same room, to be sleeping together in the same bed. They don't want to be separated, one in the sukkah and one not. And because it's not really so easy to find a comfortable place for a woman to appropriately sleep in the sukkah, therefore he says maybe that's why many men don't sleep in the sukkah either. The Shala writes, all of these opinions are shni dechiki. All of these are, you know, second-class answers. These aren't really a good justification for why men don't sleep in the sukkah. And he doesn't really understand why it is that we're not so careful about this. But either way, it's something that's an interesting point to consider. If we know that sleeping in the sukkah is really on the same level as eating in the sukkah, there really should be no differentiation at all. The Mechaber writes, what happens if it starts to rain on Sukkot? So what do we do then? The Mechaber says, if a person is in the sukkah and it starts raining, so he says you go into the house. How much does it need to rain? So the Mechaber writes, if I would have a soup on the table, and I would think that the soup would get ruined by having rain falling into it, it wouldn't taste good anymore, or it would cool down because of the rain falling into it, then he says that is the threshold of how I know that now it's time to go inside. Now says the Rama, what if we're up to the next course? We don't have soup outside. So the Rama says, obviously, even if you don't have soup on the table at the time, you can understand how much rain has to fall into the sukkah in order to make it uncomfortable for me to eat. What is the threshold? Says the Rama. If you're not so good at making that evaluation and making that judgment call, the best way to know is, he says, if let's say I was sitting in one of the rooms in my house and a leak started coming through the ceiling of that room, at what point would I leave the room and say, you know, this is very uncomfortable? At what point would that be? Says the Rama, that's the same as leaving the sukkah. Whenever it becomes uncomfortable to the point that I would have left the room in my house, so too, once it becomes uncomfortable, I would leave the sukkah as well. Now, the Shulchan Aruch quotes something from the Gemara. The Rama then says, if a person is leaving the sukkah, you shouldn't say, oh, yes, now we get to eat inside. A person should not be mevayit besukasa v'yotzei. You shouldn't kick the sukkah and leave. A person should go in behachna, he says. You should realize how sad it is that I don't have the opportunity to observe the mitzvah of sukkah. Now, here we get into an interesting discussion where the Gemara says in Masechah Sukkah that when you have somebody who's trying to perform the mitzvah of sukkah, and suddenly it starts raining, it's ke'evin shenishbach lo kiton al panav. It's like you are the butler to the king, and you come and you made some amazing concoction for him, and you think he's going to be so excited with the drink that you made for him, and then he pours it in your face because it's disgusting, because he doesn't appreciate it at all. That's what the Gemara says it feels like when we go outside to sit in the sukkah. We're trying to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu by doing his mitzvah of going outside, and then he spits in our face, so to speak. He throws it back at us by sending rain where we're not able to observe the mitzvah. So the Gemara gives that mashal, and the question then becomes, is that something that is even in Chutz La'aretz, or perhaps it is only limited to Eretz Yisrael? So the Aruch HaShulchan writes, this is only in Eretz Yisrael. That's simen. You know, sometimes it rains on sukkahs and people say, oh, it's a simen this, simen that. Aruch HaShulchan writes, it's not a simen to anything. Why? We're in a season in America where it rains all the time. It's not unexpected for it to rain. If you are in Eretz Yisrael, and it rains over the duration of Yom Tov, that is a terrible sin. That shows HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want our mitzvah. Why? Because at this time of the year in Eretz Yisrael, it's not raining. And from the fact that it chose to rain on Sukkot, that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not interested in our mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah, and that would be a sin. However, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that is not something that can be extended to those who live in Chutz La'aretz, where the season of rain is now, and it's not unusual at all for it to rain. Okay, the Aruch HaShulchan actually has a fascinating suffix, very interesting. He says, imagine it starts raining. He says, imagine I have a sukkah that has like one of those plastic covers on top. So when do you put out the plastic cover? When it's raining, and you don't want the sukkah to get all wet. Now, while I'm sitting in the sukkah, I feel it starts drizzling, but not enough that I have to go inside yet. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, I have a decision that I need to make. Should I cover over the sukkah now, and the meal that I'm in the middle of eating is not going to be eaten inside of the sukkah? Now, is that justified that I cover the sukkah now? Not really, because as things are right now, I can finish off my meal and I'll be fine. But the problem is, if I don't cover over the sukkah now, then it's going to be very hard to clean up the sukkah for subsequent meals, because it got all wet. And I'm not going to be comfortable sitting in the sukkah later for the duration of Yom Tov. So am I allowed to be mevatel my mitzvah of sukkah now during this meal in order to be able to observe the subsequent mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah later for all the other meals that I'm going to have over the course of Yom Tov? That is a very interesting suffix, and in general it's something to think about. He draws a parallel, he draws a comparison to the Gemara, where the Gemara says, Chalel alav Shabbos achas, kidei sheyishmar Shabbos harbe. When the Gemara says in Maseches Yuma that we're going to be Mechala Shabbos for someone's life who's in danger, writes the Gemara, what's the justification? Why are you allowed to be Mechala Shabbos? The Gemara goes through a whole discussion. We spoke about it in Shir, in class. But perhaps one of the reasons the Gemara gives is, Chalel alav Shabbos achas, it's worth it to violate this one Shabbos now, this week, kidei sheyishmar Shabbos harbe. While it's true that he'll make it through this Shabbos, if we don't do something on Shabbos now and violate Shabbos as it is now, he's going to miss out on 100 other Shabbos, 1,000 other subsequent Shabbos in his life. And therefore, it would be a worthwhile decision to make that I should be Mechala Shabbos now in order to save myself the opportunity to observe Shabbos many, many subsequent times in the future. And the Aruch HaShulchan here wonders, would this be the same? Would we say that maybe I should put the plastic cover over my sukkah now, even though I don't fully need it right now? I can finish off my meal and be okay, but maybe I should do it in order to save subsequent meals in the sukkah and allow those to be comfortable. Just something interesting, intriguing to think about. I think his suffix is very thought-provoking. But the Ramah here tells us something which is a very important halacha to be aware of. The Ramah says, let's say it's raining outside, and the halacha is that when it's raining, you're supposed to go in. You don't have to sit in the sukkah because teshu ke'ein tadurur, I'm not comfortable, so therefore I should go inside. Says the Rama, what if a person says, you know, I love the sukkah so much, I want to stay outside. Even if it means I'm going to be raining, even if I'm going to be wet, even if I'm going to be uncomfortable, this is the greatest gift in the world that Hashem gave me the opportunity to sit in the sukkah, I don't want to go inside. What's the halacha? Writes the Rama, quoting in Gemara. Kalapater min asukkah ve'osehu. Somebody who's not obligated to sit in the sukkah because it's raining, and you choose to sit in it anyway, he says, Eino yotze misham, he says, Eino makabel alav schar, you do not get reward for that. And he then says that you are called a hedyot. A hedyot in English is a foolish person, an idiot. That's basically what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Kalapater min adavar ve'osehu, someone who chooses to sit in the sukkah when you're not obligated to do so, is nikra hedyo, you're a fool. There's no reason to do so. Now, the Mishneh Berurah talks about this, and the Aruch HaShulchan also struggles with it. We find very often throughout halacha that even though I may not have an obligation to do something, sometimes we're machmir, we do it anyway. So why is this the exception to the rule? Why do we say, oh, no, when it comes to sukkah, anyone who's machmir is called a hedyo? That's foolish. Why is it foolish? It's the same thing I would do in many other areas of my life. So why is it specifically when it comes to sukkah that I should not be machmir? The Aruch HaShulchan explains, I'll tell you exactly why, because here, we're talking about a situation where it has to be teshu ke'en taduru. The essence of the mitzvah is that I have to be comfortable inside of my sukkah. If I'm not comfortable in the sukkah, it's not called the sukkah at all. It's not called the mitzvah. And therefore, he says, being machmir here really wouldn't make any sense, because being machmir here is something that would take me away from the essence of the entire mitzvah. Others say, perhaps the reason why is as follows, and I think this is a very important principle to keep in mind in general. Chumras are very important, and chumras are very good sometimes, but you always have to know, what are you losing by observing this chumr? Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes a story that there was a young man who was in yeshiva and decided he was going to be machmir not to carry in the Erev in Yerushalayim. Okay, so he didn't want to carry in the Erev. There's reason to be machmir not to carry in the Erev. Okay, he took the chumr upon himself. The next Shabbos, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach sees him walking down the street with his father. His father was in his 60s, and his father is carrying a big stack of folding chairs, and his son is standing right next to him, both walking down the street together. So Shlomo Zalman turns to him and he says, why is your father carrying the stack of chairs and you're not? He says, oh, we have a kiddush down the block. They didn't have enough chairs, so we went back to our house to bring them chairs so that they can have enough room for all the participants in the kiddush. Shlomo Zalman said, no, you didn't understand the question. I wasn't asking why you're bringing chairs. I was asking, why is your father schlepping the chairs and not you? So he said, oh, well, I'm machmir, I don't hold by the Erev. So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, so because you want to take a chumrah upon yourself of not holding by the Eruv, therefore you're going to be mezalzel in the mitzvah of kibud abayim, and you're going to make your father schlep the chairs. And it's important to be aware of the fact that every time we take a chumrah upon ourselves, there's always a counterbalance. There's always something that may pay the price for that chumrah. So you have to know. And it's extremely relevant. I get this question all the time when girls come back from seminary and they don't really understand what's halacha and what's just chumrah. Look, there are certain things that go on in our parents' home that are a direct violation of halacha. That's a different story. But there are certain things that go on in our parents' home that are not in direct contrary distinction to the halacha. It is something that is just a chumrah that maybe our parents are not up to observing at this point. So we have to know, at what price are we going to take a chumrah upon ourselves, and at what cost is that going to be? It's something that we always have to make a cheshbon for. And here too, the Acharonim say as follows. The Mishnah Berurah quotes that perhaps one has to keep in mind, if I'm going to continue to sit in the sukkah, it's going to infringe on my obligation of Simchas Yamtiv. And that's something that I always have to think about. Whenever I take a chumrah upon myself, you have to realize, is it going to hurt something else that I have an obligation to do? And therefore here he argues that perhaps this is the reason why, specifically in this case, the Gemara tells us, somebody who decides to sit inside of the sukkah when it's raining outside, and they're so uncomfortable, why don't you say I should be machmir? Why does the Gemara say Nikra Hedyot? Why does the Gemara call me a funny name? Why does the Gemara say I'm a fool, I'm an idiot for doing so? The answer is because here, if you choose to be machmir, it's going to be a problem of Simchas Yamtiv. You're going to infringe on something else that you should be doing. And therefore, it's always important whenever we have an opportunity to keep in mind this issue of Chumrah versus Kula, and what are we missing out on, and what are we gaining by the Chumrah that we take upon ourselves. This is just one example of that, and that is why the Gemara stresses here that we should try our best not to make that decision. We should try our best, if it's raining, to actually go inside. While it's true that they say in the name of the Baal Shem Tov that he was so excited when it rained, and he said he would have had a bittel Simchas Yantav if he went inside, and that's why he stayed out in the rain. Okay, but most of us are not the Baal Shem Tov, most of us are not the Chassidish Rebbes, and that's why, generally, for most of us, it's very uncomfortable when it's raining. It would be a tremendous impediment to the Simchas Yamtiv if we were sitting out in the rain and being uncomfortable like that, and perhaps cold at the same time. And that is why, when it's raining outside, the Gemara encourages us that we should go inside. Now, at what point? That's what the Rama says. When the rain gets too heavy, that it would ruin the food, or it would make me uncomfortable to be sitting in a room with that much rain. So that's when I leave the sukkah as well. Anyway, this was just a basic overview of many of the halachos of sukkah. I hope that it was helpful to everybody. I wish everyone a